आत्मशिष्टम् इदम् विश्वम् अन्वविश्यास शक्तिभिः यते बहुधा ब्रह्मन् श्रुत प्रत्यक्ष गोचरम्। Atmasrishtam, created by you. Idam, this. Vishwam, universe. Anva Vishya, subsequently entering. Swa, with your own. Shaktibhi, energies. Iyate, you are perceived. Bahuda, manifold. Brahman, O Supreme. Shruta, by hearing from scripture. Pratyaksha, and by direct perception. Gocharam, knowable. Translation. O Supreme Absolute Truth, with your personal energies, you create this universe and then enter into it. Thus one can perceive you in many different forms by hearing from authorities and by direct experience. Purport. The grammatical agreement of Shruta Prayaksha Gocharam in the neuter case with Atma Shristam Idam Vishwam indicates that the Supreme Lord, by entering His creation with His potencies, makes Himself perceivable within the universe. Throughout the Bhagavatam and other authorized Vedic literatures, we often find descriptions of the Lord's simultaneous supremacy over all other things and His identity with them. We cannot reasonably draw any other conclusion from Vedic literature than the one powerfully preached by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Achincha Beda Beda Tattva. That is, the Absolute Truth is greater than and distinct from everything, since He is the omnipotent creator and controller of all, and simultaneously one with everything, since all that exists is the expansion of His own power. Throughout these chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam, we also observe one of the unique, extraordinary features of this great work. Whether Krishna is sending His message to the gopis, accepting the prayers of Akrura, there is constant philosophical discussion. Throughout the Bhagavatam, the steady combination of fascinating pastimes with persistent spiritual philosophy is an extraordinary feature. We are allowed to glimpse and even to relish the spiritual emotions of the Lord and His liberated associates, and yet we are constantly reminded of their ontological position, lest we lapse into a cheap anthropomorphic vision. Thus, it is entirely in character with the work that Akrura, in his ecstasy, glorifies the Lord with precise philosophical prayers. Atma Srishtam Idam Vishwam Anva Vishva Vishya Svashaktibi Iyate Bahuda Brahman Srutta Pratyaksha Gosharam. Translation again. O Supreme Absolute Truth, with your personal energies you create this universe and then enter into it. Thus one can perceive you in many different forms by hearing from authorities and by direct experiences. Om Gyana Timrandasya Gananjana Salakaya Shakshamritam Yena Tasmai Shri Garuve Namaha. Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasadalaya Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namne. Namaste Sarasati Devi Gauravani Pracharine. Nivise Sasanya Vadi Pasachade Shatarine. Sri Prabhupada often said that religion without philosophy is just sentimentality or can end up in fanaticism. And philosophy without religion just mental speculation. So, as the commentator of this part of the Bhagavatam, the followers of Srila Prabhupada, commented that even though the Srimad Bhagavatam basically relate to the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by interspersed between all these pastimes, you find different description of the philosophical aspect of Krishna consciousness. Although Srila Prabhupada in the preface or introduction of Bhagavatam, he said that the Bhagavatam is like a pot of nectar. You can dive into any part of the nectar, you get some benefit, you know. But for a serious student, then they should go from first canto up 9th canto and then 10th canto. The reason being also that by systematically going through the different stages of Bhagavatam, one will at least appreciate the supremacy of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all his various opulences of creation, his maintenance, annihilation, the different aspects of Bhagavatam that is described there. And when we hear the pastimes, when we finally come thank and then hear the pastimes of Krishna, we can appreciate that these are not just ordinary activities. What happens is people sometimes they like to jump straight to the 10th canto. They like to jump straight to the pastimes of Krishna without properly understanding the position of Krishna. And they drag these pastimes down to the mundane level. The mundane platform. They will not be able to understand the intimacy and the intricacies of those pastimes. And some even go so far as to even imitate those pastimes. Sometimes we hear about how even in Vrindavan you find sometimes people that dress themselves as Krishna and they walk around surrounded by gopis. So I heard of it many times in classes, but I've never even seen it until one time. I was in the Krishna Balaram guest house, and as I was coming down the steps, there was Krishna and Radha walking right into the guest house in the lobby. And he was dressed in yellow garments, holding a flute in his hand, and then Radha was next to him. They were a bit old looking. I say, huh? No. At least they were male and female. And then another time I saw on the street in Vrindavan, I was going down by rickshaw and I was wondering why there's such a big crowd there. And then I was outside the Banka Bihari temple there again. I was quite, even though I've heard of it many times, I was quite shocked when I saw them, you know. And this is going on, just, you know, sentimentality and bringing down this personal of Krishna down to a very cheap level, to the mundane level. Therefore, it's essential to actually understand those pastimes that simultaneously with the philosophical understanding. So we know who Bhagavatam is describing. That it's not just anything mundane. often it's described that sometimes it's very difficult to hold contradictory, so-called contradictory statements in the mind and intellect. It requires a very intelligent person to comprehend seemingly contradictory ideas, how they can rationalize it and how they can actually combine the two. And that is the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of Achinya Bheda Bheda Tattva. How, as described here in the purport, that the absolute truth is greater than and distinct from everything. Since he is the omnipotent creator and controller of all. And yet, he is simultaneously one with everything. Since all that exists is the expansion of his own power. This is actually the greatness of the philosophy expounded by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Throughout history, there have been these two classes of personalists and impersonalists, and they are arguing. No, the absolute truth is impersonal. No, the absolute truth is personal. And they argue back and forth. But in the early part of Bhagavatam, we describe the learned sages, they understand that the absolute truth is understood in three features. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan, Iti, Sabjati. Brahman, which is the impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord, the effulgence. And Paramatma, the super soul within the every living entity. And then Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are just three different aspects of understanding of the Absolute Truth. It's not that one is right and the other one is wrong, as some neophyte devotees will argue. But for the learned, one who is actually learned in the Vedas, they understand all three aspects of the Supreme, of the Absolute Truth is there. And the culmination of this understanding is Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he actually combined this. Yes, the Absolute Truth is impersonal. It's all pervading. At the same time, he's also a person. Just like sometimes the example is given in the ocean. A drop of water in the ocean is actually a very unique atom of water. But when it's in the ocean, one just see just a vast ocean. But within the vast ocean, there's all these individual atoms. So Krishna, in his form of Mahavishnu, he created all these universes. Universes are coming out from the pore of his skin and expanding. So in one sense, the universes are external to him. It's his creation. And yet, by his expansion of Garbhadarsha Vishnu, he entered into each of this universe. He lay down on the ocean within the universe. And not only that, he entered into every living entity. In fact, even into every atom as Paramatma. So, the Supreme Lord, he is without, but at the same time he is within. There was once a religionist, a Christian priest or monk, he made a statement that it's not possible to see God because, after all, the whole creation comes from him. He's so big, you cannot go far enough to see him. If he's so big, you have to go really from a distance to be able to see, but you can't go far enough to see him. That's one aspect. Another aspect, they may, because they do not have the benefit of the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam, when these religionists come together and discuss, they may talk about, yes, God and He's a person and all this, but the ultimate conclusion they'll come to will normally be that no, He cannot be a person. Because if He expands Himself into all the living beings, that means He has become fragmented. He cannot be a person anymore. He must be impersonal because He's spread out everywhere. So, all this discussion and philosophical discussions or religious discussion and so on, forth, unless they have the benefit of the pure devotees or the benefit of knowledge coming from the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, it's all futile. A futile attempt to try to understand the absolute truth. So I stated here that in many different forms, by hearing from authorities and also by direct experience. So one of the way to understand, in fact the most bona fide way of understanding the absolute truth, is by hearing from the authorities. Mahajano yena katasa panta. It's stated in the I think it was Mahabharata. In the Mahabharata it's stated that one cannot be known as the great learned sage unless he has his own philosophy, unless he creates his own philosophy, or at least creates his own conclusion. That's what. And then went on to say that actually the knowledge of the absolute truth is hidden in the heart of the pure devotees, and to unlock that truth, one has followed in the footsteps of the Mahajan. Mahajano yena katha sapanta. It's complex. It often, I'm often amazed, until today I'm still amazed sometimes when you talk to people. And how often, as a preacher, you all know that how often you meet people who will say that, no, actually, you understand spiritual, you have to understand the spiritual knowledge according to your own self. Because I'm an individual, so you have to find your own truth. Isn't it? You do not need any authority to tell you. You have to find it yourself. I mean, when you find it, you know it. It's really amazing, isn't it? That so many departments of knowledge everywhere, you always have a teacher. Why does all these people, they go to the university? Mainly it's the students. They go to university and study. In so many different departments of knowledge. But when it comes to the most intricate, most complex knowledge, you do not need a teacher. You just have to figure it out yourself. It really amazes me. Every time I hear that, although I've heard it so many times, each time I hear it, I'm just amazed. How ignorant people can be, and how inconsistent it is. It's very inconsistent. On one hand, so many mundane subject matters, they have to get it from authority. But when it comes to spiritual knowledge, they say, no, you have to figure it out yourself. It's very inconsistent. So sometimes when you point that out to them, then they start to think. Normally people don't really think very deeply about things. It just, whatever comes in their head, they just blurt it out. So when you point it out, the inconsistency is that, they become like that. They become, you're more confused. Therefore, this Shastra recommended Mahajana Yena Katha Sapanta. One has to learn the absolute truth. It will be revealed to someone who is following the footsteps of the Mahajans. It will be revealed. So, in the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chincha Beda Beda Tattva, all the conflicting philosophical understanding is nicely explained. That one can explain, yes, Krishna is without everything, is beyond everything, but at the same time is within everything. In the form of Mahavishnu, he created everything. He's outside of everything. But at the same time, he entered into each universe as Govardhan Shri Vishnu, entered within the heart of every living entity and also atoms as Paramatma, Shirodha Shri Vishnu. So in this way, it's also stated in the Bhagavad Gita in the 7th chapter, how it said this, the external energy, the material energy, bhumiyapo nalavayo kamanu buddhi evacha ahankara iti yami bina prakritim asada. This material energy comprising of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, these are my external energy. And then he said, but beyond this material energy is a living being, which is powering it. And in the purport, Prabhupada also explained that the material energy, the material world, the basis of this material world is the spiritual energy, the spirit. Without the spirit, matter cannot move. It's just like now we have a form, we can stand a rag, we can move. We have a form because of the presence of the soul, because of the presence of the spirit. But when the spirit is removed, or when the spirit is taken out from the equation, matter will just become just a lump. That's what happened to a dead body. Gradually just disintegrate, become just merged back into the earth. And Krishna went on to say that I am the source of both. I am the source of both the spiritual and material world. And he didn't say just even one time. He said that again in the 10th chapter. Aham savasya prabhavo matta savam prabhatate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samavita. I'm the source of both the spiritual and material worlds. It all comes from me. So Krishna is the source of everything. Therefore knowledge, as also Prabhupada said in one of the early purport of Bhagavad Gita, he also said, what is real knowledge? Knowledge means to understand the difference between spirit and matter and the controller of both. That's real knowledge. It's not just a matter of distinguishing spirit from matter, but one has to also understand who is actually the controller of both. So Krishna is the controller of both. It's his energy. And by this energy, Parasha Shakti Vyudaiva Shruyate, by his energy everything is manifested. Knowledge, strength, power, it's all automatically manifesting throughout the creation, just by his energy. There was once, I think the one disciple of Sri Bhakti Siddhanta, a German scholar, he was looking for God, for knowledge, came to India, went to so many different temples. First he went to all the temples of demigods and always they are carrying a weapon, killing some demons and doing something. So he thought this cannot be the supreme. And then finally he came, saw the deities of Radha and Krishna just playing on the flute. He said, this must be the supreme. God cannot be doing all this hard work. He's always enjoying. So yes, he's always enjoying in the past, in his various pastimes. But at the same time, how does one understand the creation and maintenance and destruction is coming from him? Therefore the Shastra explained that all these are done just by his energies. It's automatically manifesting all his energy of creation, maintenance, and destruction. By his energies, by his different agents, all these things are taken care of. And Krishna is just engaged in these different pastimes. So again, suppose seems to be a contradiction. So unless one actually hear the get this knowledge from the bona fide authorities, how can one properly understand this intricate knowledge? One can only confuse. Therefore, this guy, you can argue and argue and argue. You can talk and talk, someone said, you know, you can talk until the tongue touches the ground. You can talk until the cows come home. You will not come to any proper conclusion. There will be no proper conclusion. It's very important to hear. Therefore, you hear, you find in the Prabhupada's books, very often he used the words submissive oral reception. Where do you normally find this kind of phrase and expression in any English books that we read? You don't find that. Submissive oral reception. So one, we have to submit ourselves to proper oral reception, proper hearing. Hearing submissively. Not hearing in a challenging way, but hearing submissively. To assimilate the knowledge being given and try to understand the knowledge. That's why we study. We carefully study these great works of Sri Prabhupada, great works of the Acharyas, and try to understand who Krishna is. Not just be attracted just only to the pastimes, but also the philosophical aspects of Krishna consciousness, a different knowledge. How he's creating, how the universe is created. Of course, we are different individuals, we are different inclinations. Like for myself, when I read certain part of Bhagavatam, second chapter, about the creation, sometimes it's difficult to comprehend about all the different elements coming to being and the different senses, the sense objects and all this. You just read through, try to appreciate it. Maybe you cannot understand it deeply. At least try to appreciate how creation is coming about. And also, of course, you hear about the Bhagavatam, again, the description of the universe. Pretty scientific knowledge is given there. Not everyone has all these scientific inclinations. Now, basically, myself, I'm just a very simple devotee. I just like to read, like, how should I serve Krishna, how the best way to engage in devotional service and all this. And these are things that attracts me. And I go deeper into those things. But that doesn't mean you should not try to at least understand or appreciate how the universe is created, how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is creating everything, maintaining everything, and ultimately in the end, how this destruction takes place. So when we appreciate these aspects of Krishna, we will appreciate even more about his pastimes. That these are not mundane activities. These pastimes are going on a very, very, on a spiritual level and on a very elevated level. So therefore, the commentator make that point here, that throughout the Bhagavatam, even in the pastimes of Krishna, there all these philosophical points are inserted in between the pastimes. Not just, oh, Krishna did this, he did that. Even when he was sending the Uddhava as a messenger to the gopis, also in the message, in the observation, in the prayers of the gopis, in the discussion, there all these philosophical aspects are mentioned. So similar here, in the prayers of Akrura, he's receiving Krishna and Balaram. At the same time, he's revealing also, O Supreme Absolute Truth, with your personal energies, you create this universe and then enter into it. Thus, one can perceive you in many different forms by hearing from authorities and by direct experience. So Krishna, although he created the universe, he also entered into it. He also appeared in different incarnations and become visible. It is not like I was saying earlier, this Christian monk, that you cannot go far enough to see God because he's so great. But he can also appear in a form that we can see, just like he appeared in the Achavigraha form. Yes, he's very big. As Mahavishnu, I mean, how big can you get? Mahavishnu, universe coming out from the pore of his skin. I mean, try to rationalize that. How do you rationalize that in our mind? The universe is coming out from the skin of a person. How big can that be? How can you even begin to fathom how big Mahavishnu is? There's no way. So it's a fact. Now, if Mahavishnu, how are you going to serve him? How are you going to even approach Mahavishnu in that form? Therefore, Krishna is so kind. He come in his Acharvigraha form. He comes in the form of Acharvigraha, so we can serve. We can serve, we can bathe him, we can dress him, we can feed him. Otherwise, how are you going to feed Mahavishnu? There's not enough boga to cook for him. And it's so huge. When you breathe in, universes come into him. So Krishna appear in the form, not only Acharvigraha form, he also come in different incarnations and reciprocate with his devotees in different pastimes, sometimes according to the desire of the devotees, according to the prayers of the devotees, Krishna come in his different forms. And the devotees are able to see him. They're able to see him, they're able to relate to him, able to engage in different pastimes with him. He come as a child, so Mother Yashoda can feed him. So all these wonderful pastimes are there. Mother Yashoda is calling out, Krishna, Balaram, please come. Come and eat now. I say, no, we want to play. We want to play longer. No, you come. Otherwise, your father is waiting for you. Everything is going to get cold. You come. Oh, father is waiting for us. Okay, you come. So sweet. But for a lot of people, they cannot appreciate that. Very difficult to appreciate Krishna coming as a child. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A child? How can that be? And a lot of people actually, even in India, when they read all these pastimes, they think, this is just Indian mythology. You hear that also, even amongst the Indians, they say, oh, this Indian mythology. They think it's all just stories made up by the grandmothers and been passed down just for children to listen to. And when you grow up, you grow out of it. It's just a child, Santa Claus, right? It's just for children. When you grow up, you just grow out of it. So similarly, people think, because they have no proper understanding, no proper education. They have no idea who the Supreme Personality of God is. They just have some vague understanding. Yes, Krishna, yes, Supreme, yes. It's just about it. But who he really is, what he's capable of doing. Even you speak to someone, they may say, yes, Krishna is God. And then you went and say, yeah, he did this. No, he cannot do this. He cannot do that. Why? If he's God, why? How can you add and say cannot? Sometimes people they challenge. Can God create a rock heavier than he can carry? And they thought, oh, stump the guru. Yes, he can. He can create a rock heavier than he can carry, and then he expands himself and pick it up. Krishna's potency is expanding all the time, constantly. You cannot say, okay, he's like this, that's it. He's unlimited. You can't put a limit to it. So again, unless one has a bit of philosophical understanding, it's very difficult to appreciate. How can he come as a child? Allow his mother to tie him up. How can such mundane people appreciate the sweet relationship between Mother Yashoda and Krishna? In the modern era, they'll say, this is child abuse. report her to the authorities. Tying up a small child? How can you do that? But a sweet dealing. And it was not just ordinary that Mother Yashoda tie him up. She could not tie him up. No matter how many ropes she put together, they were just two fingers too short. She was able to tie up Krishna only when Krishna allows himself to be tied up. And it's described by their child, he was tied with the robe of love. Therefore, in the Dhammada Astakam, in the last prayer, I say, I offer my obeisances to the robe that tie Krishna. So this devotee, he had no illusion of who Krishna is. So much so, he offered his obeisances to the robe that tie Krishna. That's deep realization. That's deep, based on a solid philosophical understanding. Even gopis, even though it's described as gopis may be just simple cowherd girls, not very sophisticated or anything, but still you see when they, you hear when they're speaking, all this philosophical, different philosophical aspect comes out, philosophical understanding comes out. They do have the knowledge, but their love for Krishna is not just based on this philosophical understanding, they've gone beyond that. Their love for Krishna is just pure attraction, just pure love based on full surrender to Krishna. Sometimes we may be, that's the difference between worshipping Krishna with awe and reverence, just only philosophical understanding, but the actual love or bhava has not fully manifest. So we offer with awe and reverence. But for the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they've gone way beyond that. It just, they're just serving Krishna just out of pure love. So much so, they can chastise Krishna. They can play tricks on Krishna. We cannot just go on the altar and start speculating and that we have a special relationship. And I think there was one time, one Mataji, she was a pujari. And she, when she was dressing Krishna, she put a lunchbox. And someone asked, why do that? He said, well, you know, Krishna is going to the forest to play. So, like, you know, Prabhupada didn't appreciate that. The deity worship has all has to be strict procedures. You cannot start speculating how you should do it. Therefore, Prabhupada said, we may be worshipping Radha Krishna, but we're worshipping Radha Krishna in the mood of Lakshmi Narayana. Because the worship of Radha Krishna is just based on love. So if the love is not there, then where is the worship? So we worship Radha Krishna in the mood of Lakshmi Narayana with opulence. And by that worship, gradually, that love develops. Just like we sometimes we hear how different devotees, they worship. Like we hear about this devotee, it was amazing. His name was Ghanashyam. Radhanath Maharaj was describing this lila in Vrindavan. He took his devotees, thousands of devotees, and went to see this temple. Normally, it's out of the parikrama path. He went and he was describing about this devotee, how he met him. Actually, before he joined ISKCON, he was like a Babaji in Vrindavan, and he met this devotee. And his worship was not according to any procedure, but just pure love. And he said, so much love for these deities. And he was considering himself such a servant of this devotee that he treated. He said, and Radhanath Maharaj was saying, I was just a very new devotee and he was treating me with so much respect. He said, no, you are the guest of Brother Vallabha, I think, Gopijana Vallabha. You are the guest of Radha Gopijana Vallabha, so I should serve you. He was so austere that there were just a few families in the area and he would collect just three or four chapatis every day. That was his meal. And he offered the deities and then he would eat. But when Radhanath Maharaj was there, he would offer him chapatis. He said, no, you eat. He said, don't worry. Radha Rani is supplying. There are plenty. And he would serve him all the chapati. And after a few days, some of his Babaji friend told him, he said, you know, Ghanashyam has been fasting for the last 3-4 days. So why is that? Because you are eating all his chapatis. He's giving you all his chapati, he's not eating anything. So much devotion this devotee had. And one time they were sleeping in the night, because one time they were having bhajan and Maharaj was wanting to go back. He said, where do you go? Where do you sleep? He said, I sleep by the Yamuna. It was January. It can be very cold in Vrindavan. in January. Said, no, you sleep here. And he has just this one old torn blanket, chadar, thin chadar. And he gave it to Maharaj. He said, no. And they were just going back and forth. No, you are the guest of Radha Gopi Chandrabala. You use it. He said, no. He said, if you insist, I'll go. He said, okay, you stay. He used it. So Ganeshan was using it, but then in the night, middle of the night, Maharaj woke up and said, oh, it's nice, it's a bit warm. Then he woke up, the blanket was on him. And he saw next to him, Ganeshan was shivering. So he picked up the blanket, quietly just put it on Ganeshan Prabhu. And he said, immediately he woke up, he said, no, you take. And then arguing going on. And then again, Ganeshan had it. And again he woke up in the night. The chadar was on him. So Maharaj was saying one time, said this is a place where I got special mercy from the deities. He said one time, someone offered some sweet rice, cooked some sweet rice and brought it to Ganesha. And he was offering to the deity. And he said he had a very special way of offering to the deities. He take a spoon, take up the sweet rice, put it to Krishna's mouth and Radharani. And then he told Radha Maharaj, he said, open your mouth and poof, throw it into the mouth. Again, he offer and then just throw it like that. Now we cannot do that. We cannot start thinking, oh, Ganeshan is doing it, so we can also imitate. And following the footsteps of Mahajan. This is not following. Prabhupada make a distinction. Following the footsteps but do not imitate. So these devotees were just worshipping Radha Krishna just out of pure love. There was no rules and regulations, they were just pure love. And the fact of their pure love is that this devotee, he has no other engagement, or no, except just, he will be serving the deities, and all day long he will be just singing bhajans for the deities. And he lived very, very austere. The deities, actually found a deity on the, previously he was actually, he was a son of a rich man. He came to Vrindavan, he became so much attracted, he didn't want to go back. And then we're just staying by the bank of the Yamuna, and he'll worship Radharani, and his form of worship, he just, every day he would just write the name of Radha on the sand, on the bank, and he would just perform his worship, bhajan. And every day he would just wipe away the name, and again the next day he would write, so nobody stepped on him. So one day as he was writing, he was cleaning up, he touched something, and he take it up, and there was a head, and dig out, it was a deity of Gopi Jana Vallabha. It was self-manifest deity just found on the bank, and was worshipping under the tree. He would not leave the deity except to get some water to bathe them. And one day someone was observing him for a while, and he came for his, and offered him, he said, I do not have much space, but I've been observing you, you've been worshipping this deity under a tree. Why do you bring them to my house? I have a corridor, just a small corridor, and you can have your deities there. So he worship the deities there, he will sleep there on the corridor, and there's a corridor where the family member is going in and out of the house. And he was worshipping this deity for many, many years. And he was getting old. Even when he was getting old, he would go to Yamuna, carry water. When he carried water, he would walk one, two steps, put it down, and then pick it up, walk one, two steps, and put it down. He was so old. And one time Radha Maharaj saw him, he said, let me help you. He said, no. This is my service to Radha Gopi Chandra Vallabha. Please don't take away my service. This is my service. This is all I can do for my worshipful Lord. So please don't take away my service. It was how attached he was to that service, even though he was old and frail. Just see how we so easily give up our service. But even though he has difficulty, he would not give up his service. So that is, this is someone who on pure love, worshipping Krishna on the pure love. So then later on, he was, even though he was old, and he was always wishing. You know, he was there in Vrindavan so many years, but he's never been to Govardhan. And never been to Radhakund. Because he would not leave his deities. He was only one person worshipping deities, and he would not leave the deities as one parikrama to worship the other holy places. He would not do that just to at the expense of neglecting his deities. That was how devoted he was. So later on, some trusts wanted to build a temple, but they have no deities, and someone told the trustee that there was this, devotee has these deities but no temple. So he agreed, brought the deities to this temple, trained up someone to worship deities, and after he trained up someone to worship deity, he left his body. He said, okay, now someone is there to worship deities, all, and he left. Went back to the spiritual world. So that's the difference. Therefore in Vrindavan, this worship is by the Brajavasi. They are just worshipping Krishna just out of pure love. And you can see the intensity, the enthusiasm they have. I had this experience once in Jaipur, in Radha Govinda temple. I came there early for darshan. It was before the curtain was open, so I thought I got a good spot right in front of the deities. I was standing right in front. And you know, the opening is very small. No, it's not like the big, just a small opening of the deities altar. So I'm standing right in front there. My friend, my wife, we were there. And as the time come closer to the darshan time, all these devotees coming in, they come in with so eagerness, so much enthusiasm, they're like practically like rushing into the temple. And as they came, they were pushing. I was pushed to the other end. And they were there, they were calling out to the deities, Govinda, Radha Govinda. And I was just watching, and I was amazed. And then there was kirtan, and then you see the ladies, they cover their saris, their head, and they'll be dancing, very beautifully dancing. The man one side, the Matiji dancing, and dancing very beautifully. Because after all, Radha Govinda, the deities of Rupa Goswami, they're actually from the same sampradaya of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We also come from the Rupa Goswami Sampradaya. Rupa, that's why you call Rupa Nugas, follower of Rupa Goswami, but just different branches of it. So that was an eye-opener for me too, to see how much eagerness, how much enthusiasm they have for the deities that come. That place is that even the king will go for Mangarati. The whole town is just... sometimes I find actually the mood there was much better than my experience in Vrindavan, I found. I went to a few of these temples, I think Radha Shyamasunda, the original deities of Vrindavan are there in Jaipur. And when we came there, maybe they don't see Western devotees as often or as many as Vrindavan. You don't get harassed for donations. And they do the aarti, they always, the pujari is very nice, they come forward and they give you prasadam. And we were circumambulating the altar, the deities, and the pujari saw us, called us over. And they just take to lassi leaf, take garland from deities and just give to us. Never ask. Now when you go to Southeast Temple, they say, the nation, I don't know how many rupees nowadays. You want darshan? Darshan of Krishna's footprint. Yeah, they pay. So these are there. You still see pockets of this. in India. If you're fortunate enough to meet them, you can give some ideas, give some glimpse of how Krishna is worshipped with love, just with love, complete dedication. So, but it's not that they do not have this philosophical understanding. They have this understanding. They have this knowledge, but they've gone beyond that knowledge. This philosophical knowledge is always the foundation. It's like the foundation of Krishna consciousness. It's very essential. Because if you approach Krishna consciousness in a sentimental way, then just out of, when we are tested, when things become challenging, and if we do not have this strong philosophical understanding, we just drift away. Easily we just drift away. So therefore it's essential. That's why Prabhupada, he wrote all these books, and he was telling all this, you have to read. One time, when he was presented with the, I think it was 5th canto, part 1. I think it was 5th canto, I think it was in Nairobi. He practically read from beginning to end. And he, as he was reading, was just amazed. It was just like, you know, he's enjoying the reading. And then he lamented that they are not reading. They are not reading my book. They think that these books are only meant for distribution. He said, but actually I've written these books for them, referring to his devotees, the devotees. I've written these books for them. So it's not only meant for distribution, it's meant for us to read, to study, and understand and value the wonderful gift of Krishna consciousness, how wonderful this philosophy is. It's so wonderful that when, even though we may not be great scholars, but if we just understand some part of this knowledge, when we speak, people become amazed. Another thing was, I always find it very ironic, when I was in Copenhagen, and considering I just finished high school, I didn't go for any further education, I just finished high school, okay, just a high school graduate. And there was this PhD. He was a lecturer in the university teaching Vaishnavism. And he would come to the temple sometime, look me up, and ask me questions about Chaitanya's philosophy. And there I am, giving him knowledge. And I always find it so ironic. Here I am, just a high school graduate, and this guy is a PhD, and he is coming to me for knowledge. And this is amazing thing about Prabhupada's books. If you just read Prabhupada's books and study, you can amaze the most scholarly person, because they don't have the knowledge out there. Doesn't matter how intelligent, how scholarly that person is. You just describe some simple thing about Chincha Veda Veda Tattva, they become amazed. People become amazed. This is one of the glory of Sri Prabhupada. Even if you do not know, you can just repeat what we have heard, what we have read. We just repeat. And people say, wow, you are so learned. So it's there. This is one of the wonderful gifts Prabhupada has given us. And we will do honor to Prabhupada, the sacrifice austerity make by studying them. Prabhupada will wake up, he will sleep for 2 hours, 3 hours, get up, chant, japa, and then he will translate. He spent hours and hours translating this. When everyone is sleeping, still in deep sleep, whichever city he's in, and Prabhupada never experienced this jet lag. He would just travel and he would follow the same schedule. He'd get up and everyone is still sleeping, he would be doing his translation and his Bhaktivedanta Purport commentaries. And so much Prabhupada has given, put into it. So we honor Prabhupada by reading his books, systematically studying his books. So this one way also we worship Srila Prabhupada by reading. So are there any questions, comments? So you ask him, so what color should it be?
Yes.
Normally they can't answer that. And if they say yellow, then you say, why yellow? Any color is, you can always say why. That's the way it is. Bluish. Isn't that a saying, dark is beautiful? Sometimes the best way to answer the question, answer them with another question, and you keep questioning, because sometimes this ridiculous question, this the only way is just to answer with a question. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.